What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, you don't have to worry about any of us reading from cursed books, because we can't read anyway. We'll talk about it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and here with me, Mike Duranik.
What's going on, Ethan?
And Brad Miller.
What's up?
We are kicking off the month of June with My Choice. That's how well-informed I am on this show. I don't even know what I picked for the month. My Choice of 1999's The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, Arnold Vosloo, I think is how you say the mummy's name. But really, we picked this because of Brendan Fraser. This is always a movie that I've enjoyed. And just recently, Brendan Fraser won the Academy Award for Best Performance, Best Lead Performance for his work in The Whale. So seemed pretty relevant to discuss really the movie that turned him for a very short period of time into a megastar, which we'll get into his career because we've never talked about him. But this really is kind of the big, big breakout blockbuster role that he had. So he just got the big accolade at the Academy Awards. So we decided to do The Mummy here to kick off the month of May. So before we get too far into it, we have a question that I always ask. I almost went the wrong direction. Forgot, when you record once a month, you start to forget the order that things are supposed to be in. Let me ask you guys a question as we start to talk about The Mummy, and that is, what was your first experience with this film? Did you guys see it in the theaters in 99? Did you catch it later on TV or streaming or whatever? Was this your first experience with it? What did you bring into this rewatch for the podcast?
I believe that this was my first time seeing it. I know it was popular. It's just never been my sort of genre, I guess, or things that I've been into, so I avoided it. I think I've maybe seen parts of it, and I knew what it was, had heard about it, but you guys both look very surprised, so I'm assuming that's much different than your experience with this. But yeah, I think this was my first time from beginning to end seeing The Mummy film.
Well, yeah, I was surprised, but mostly that's because I do think this movie, in the late 90s and then early 2000s, had a pretty big cultural reach. I mean, it had multiple sequels. It launched the Rock for the first time, really.
Yes.
You know, not from this movie, obviously, but from this franchise into Hollywood. And so, yeah, just it's surprised me that it hadn't crossed your path. For me, you know, the years are rapidly fading into the background. If I had to bet, and I could go back in a time machine and verify, I would bet I saw this in the theater. I would almost guarantee that the summer of 1999, is that correct?
Yep.
That I saw this in the theater. I can't be certain, but I have seen it a number of times since then, and was enjoying, or looking forward to enjoying, this rewatch.
Yeah, this movie for me is quite a crossroads of, like, my family and movies that I got raised on in two very different ways. I did not see this in theaters when I was 3 years old. Not that, I mean, you may maybe be surprised by that at this point based on the things I did probably see when I was 3 and 4 years old, but did not see this one. But my dad is a huge, like, old school movie fan, and definitely the old monster movies. So when I was a kid, I saw, like, the 1930s mummy movie, like Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi doing Dracula, the old Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon. Like, I grew up on those. And then the flip side of that, my grandma thought back then, I don't know about now, I mean, Brendan Fraser looks quite different now, but my grandma just thought that Brendan Fraser, in her own words, was just the cutest thing ever. So she loved him and loved this movie. So at some point in the crossroads there of my dad loved the old mummy movies and I grew up on those, and my grandma loving Brendan Fraser, my family had this movie. And saw it when I was a kid. I think, actually, I had the DVD of The Mummy Returns before I had this, oddly enough. But then, I mean, it was just kind of just always around my childhood, was this and The Mummy Returns. Watched them both a bunch of times as a kid. I'm not going to say that this is in Red Eye territory, but just because at that time, again, this is so far before streaming, what you have is what you had. And as a kid, you know, we've got 10, 12 movies or whatever you get on repeat, and this and the second one was definitely one of them. So I'm kind of surprised that it was never even really an option for me before we got to now season 3 of the threequel here, but I'm definitely glad that we got to kind of dip back into this piece of nostalgia for me, and I'm curious where it ended up for you guys as we get into it. So let's find out what everybody else thinks about this movie with the Rotten Tomatoes game. Mike, you're in the hot seat. You're going to pick first. Brad, you're going to try to snipe him one way or the other. So Mike, what is your guess for the Rotten Tomatoes score of The Mummy? Sorry. And if you get Tom Cruise's The Mummy correct, I'll just give you the points.
Oh, so
because I guarantee you they're two very different scores.
So I can win two ways,
yes,
here, right?
Yes.
What you're saying. Brad, this, you're at a huge disadvantage here. So, you know, this movie, I recall it being pretty successful, but also being like a classic summer popcorn flick that really knew what it was, right? And so I've been sitting here and I have been bouncing back and forth. I cannot imagine that this is that fresh on the Rotten Tomatoes meter, and so I am going to stick with just fresh. I'm going to hit it on 60. I'm going to let Brad decide if he thinks it's rotten or if it's more fresh than that.
Wow, that was much lower than I expected you to go, so this is an easy choice for me. I'm going to say 61, but I really have no idea where I was going to go with it if I had to guess first. So you made the choice easy for me by saying 60, but I really have no idea, and this could be a rotten movie. Who knows?
Well, before Ethan tells us, my rationale here is I don't think Brendan Fraser was very well regarded at the time. These movies, I don't recall when the sequel came out, them being like, oh my gosh, this is a great follow-up. I think it was just like classic summer action, late 90s, so that's why I went there, is that I don't recall it being well received, but I could be wrong.
So I will tell you, as far as you said you remembered it being quite a success as a summer popcorn movie, they spent $80 million on this, and again, in 1999, it made $416 million. So that is a resounding, that's a success now, but that's an even bigger success in 1999.
So probably wrong.
Mike, you said 60% because you thought that this movie might have just cleared the threshold of fresh. That is that right there, 60 and 59. And because you went with your gut, you've hit it right on the head. This movie is sitting at 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. Way to start off the month with just the painfully obvious way to cheat as we choke her.
I just got to go for the queen sweep here.
Yeah.
I am shocked on that. My favorite part is it's not like Brad felt strongly either way. Wow. Okay.
I appreciate that. If you're going to cheat, you might as well just get it right.
It's not naturally
fun to just hang around. But yeah, 60%, quite a gap, actually.
Be prepared for me to just hit all of the rest of them on the head. I'm not even going to pretend that I'm not cheating this month. I can't honestly believe that's exactly it. But yeah, I don't know. Where's the audience?
So that's where, had we been playing based on the fan scores, Brad would have won, but you guys would have been way off. The fans had this at 75%. So that's quite a gap. Like once we start getting into double digits, that is quite a large space between the critics and the fans, and 15% is very big. So the fans have this pretty high up there, and it shows in the box office, $400+ million at the time. The second one, they bumped the budget up quite a bit. They spent like $100 million to make that second one, and it had the same return. So still a success, not as big of a success, and it was only 2 years later, based on what you said. So fans liked it more than critics.
So what was the Tom Cruise The Mummy then?
Oh, I will have to look that up. I'm going to tell you that one is far into the rotten category. I mean, that is one of the biggest failures in Hollywood history. It basically lost an entire studio their job. That one sitting at 15%. So that one's sitting at the gap of the fans and the critics here. So, yes,
I don't think we've watched a movie that was in that territory.
I don't think we have. We've watched some that should have been in that category.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so focusing on the Brendan Fraser Mummy then, the next thing that we always talk about is Rotten Tomatoes correct, and it's interesting when we have a gap like this. Do we side more with the critics? Where are we at with the fans? But what do you guys think? Is Rotten Tomatoes correct at a 60%, this movie just barely dipping into the fresh side of the scale?
So I always struggle with how that scale works, because 60 to me sounds low, but 60 according to this is like, okay, yeah, decent movie, you know, some good, some bad. So I guess, yeah, in reality, that's about right. You know, there were parts of it that were very engaging with my first time seeing it. There were times it was just kind of like, wow, this is corny, you know, but I think that's what they were going for. So they weren't too far off the mark for what they were trying to do. It wasn't, I don't think they were taking themselves too seriously. So, I think 60 is pretty fair.
Yeah, I think, so basically, again, that's 6 out of 10 critics saw this and gave it a thumbs up, essentially, right?
Yep.
My heart wants to say, no, they're not right. The fans are more right. I don't think that there's any world in which this is better than a 75. But the thing is, it's a flawed movie. It's an entertaining movie. I think it for what it was, it has held up pretty well over the years. Probably aided by the fact that it was played back in time, and so some of the stuff that maybe, you know, quote unquote wouldn't work as well now, well, they're still reflecting back in history, and so I think again it's fine, and ultimately fresh is probably where this should lie. So I would say yes, I think that the critics are mostly correct.
I will end up saying that I think the critics are wrong, and that the fans are the more right ones, because, and I think what's interesting, why I enjoy how we pick the movies for the show, that we go the exact month and go throughout the calendar, is because how we kind of judge the movies changes each month, because the movie industry has been the same for a long time, and different genres of movies really come out at different times of the year. We're now in that summer mode, that summer blockbuster time of the year, and for this movie, it's an action-adventure movie, and I really do enjoy the genre. Like, I have always had fun with the Indiana Jones movies, talking about, like, that time period all the way up to I will happily watch the National Treasure movies. Like, give me just a fun adventure across the globe, whatever. Like, I like this genre when it's done well. And this, what you need to succeed in these movies is a story that is at least mildly interesting, and a charismatic lead. And they, in my opinion, hit a massive home run with Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz. Like, those two alone sell this entire franchise to me. And that's why I had just, like, last summer tried watching all three of the movies from this franchise. And this and The Mummy Returns, loved it because it's all about them. She's not in the third one. I think I turned it off after a half hour. Like, those two really do sell it so well. And now seeing Brendan Fraser, he's been in the spotlight more. Obviously, like, I was young enough, I never really saw him in interviews and things like that back in the late 90s, early 2000s. To see the kind of person he actually is, he is a very quiet, reserved, shy, and not in a bad way, like a somewhat socially awkward person. The fact that he's able to portray this guy on screen, I think, is even more impressive. I really do think this is, like, in the 75 range. I'm curious, now we can talk about our rankings. I do have official rankings. I'm curious now where you guys have this at, kind of based on some things you've said. For me, when I was going through and making my rankings finally after all this time, like, I kind of bracketed out, you know, like, top 10, top 20 is really, top 30 is still really great. Top 50 is kind of where we start to, maybe there's a break there. And I have this at 52. I have this just outside the top 50. So not one of the all-time, like, fantastic, amazing movies, but because of how high of regard I hold it in this genre, it's pretty close.
Well, I had it just a little lower than you. I had it at 68.
Okay.
But solidly in the middle of all of the movies that we have viewed. And, you know, we're at, I think, at the end of this month, 121. Is where we end, and so if we think of it in terms of, like, I like the way you put that, and I'll have to glance at my list here, but top third, middle third, bottom third, it's solidly right in the middle of that middle tier.
I came in the lowest of the three of us at 72, so not by much. If big picture wise, to only have a 20 spot gap between the three of us is pretty close. We're much further off on other movies than we are this one. I think some of the things that just, I guess, lost it for me, there were some parts that were really, really entertaining. I think the Brendan Fraser, Rachel, is it Vice? Is
Vice,
that
how you say
it? Yep. Vice stuff is, it's a bit cringy at times. Like, it's almost like you could tell this movie was made in the late 90s, and, you know, that went before the, you know, the Me Too stuff and things like that, because, like, he essentially is like, I'm good looking and you're going to be with me if I want you to, kind of vibe through the whole thing. Tricks her into kissing him, shows up in her bedroom at one point. Luckily, she passes out at one point before he can kiss her because she's too drunk and who knows what's going to happen there. Like, a bit cringy, cringy in today's era of things that go on. But overall, like, you know, there were some cool things about it. I think that this movie gets made now, probably with better CGI and things like that. It's going to be less corny, better graphics, but then you lose some of that that appeal that they're going for, some of that Indiana Jones vibe that they throw in there with it. Some of it even kind of feels like spaghetti western at times. So, you know, some neat little, I guess, avenues they go down with that stuff. But overall, enjoyable. You know, it took me this long to see it the first time. I probably won't ever watch it again. So, yeah, it's right there in the middle for me.
I mean, I'll give credit for it being 1999. Like, you can't expect a ton from the special effects, but as he changes his forms, like, from the skeleton mummy all the way up to, like, the fully skinned whatever, I think, like, it's creepy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I think it's when he kisses her, he has, like, a hole in the side of his face that, like, a bug crawls out of and crawls back into. Like, that's still, I don't like it, and it still, like, makes my skin crawl. And then even, like, some of the other curses, the guy that loses his eyes and stuff, like they do a really good job of, this is a fun, I won't say family movie, but they definitely try to sell it. They keep it PG-13. They're trying to sell it to a bigger audience. Well, there's a few moments where it is horrifying, and it's to a credit of the effects and the makeup that they put on it, because there's some creepy stuff in here. Even though the scarabs, too, it doesn't look good. Like, that CGI doesn't look real good, the thing crawling around, but they do a good enough job of, you can imagine how mm-hmm. terrifying that would be to have something crawling through your skin. And I think that part is really where it excels.
Yeah, so I'm curious. So there are three movies bunched together here, and I just want, this is the nice thing about having these rankings. I just want to throw these out, three movies we've watched, and just put them in order, 1, 2, 3. Don't worry about looking at yours. You don't have to. Just gut instinct right here, all right? Three similar movies in terms of they're just action flicks, okay? Twister, Ready Player One, and then The Mummy.
I have, for mine, I have The Mummy, where I said in the 50s. I think Ready Player One, I have 60s, 70s in there. And then Twister is almost 100.
Okay.
Yeah, without looking at my rankings to see, I think it's probably The Mummy, then Ready Player One, then Twister. But in reality, if you ask me just, you know, gut instinct, which one would you rather see? I'm going to say Twister first, because it's got a
nostalgic
appeal, and it's kind of almost a once a year, maybe every other year sort of viewing for me. But yeah, I don't know. I'll look afterwards. I wanted to answer the question without, because I think that's kind of the point of your question. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this and Ready Player One are kind of in that same ballpark for me.
Gotcha. Very good. And I read them directly the order I've got them on my list. Those are back to back to back in that
order. Oh, all
Twister,
three.
Okay. Ready Player One, and then this.
When I ranked it, because I looked through when I was ranking these four from this month now, because I made the list and then I added these in, I was scrolling through just kind of picking out, well, I think it jumps this bridge, and then I got right to Tombstone is what I have right before this, and that was the moment I got to where I was like, action movie, that's just fun, not meant to be anything more, and I will hit play on Tombstone before I hit play on this. There's my cutoff line. So that's kind of where I've gotten to with my rankings, just like, what am I hitting play on? Mm. Like, maybe one movie is better than another, but am I going to? Because we have to blend it somehow, because we've just got so many different types of movies. So,
well, exactly. And I ended up putting my money where my mouth is. I went back and looked at my list, and actually Twister is ranked the highest of the three for me. So I'm glad that, you know, my my gut instinct matches my actual ranking of these, and Twister came in at 61 for me, and this one's 72. So all of those are very close. Actually, what was the third one again?
Ready Player One.
That came in at 69. So between 61 and 72 for me on these.
So you and I actually had them in the exact same order. Mine were all bunched together, but Twister, Ready Player One, and then this.
So let's talk Brendan Fraser then, because I think he has a very unique career compared to most leading men, and even leading ladies, anybody that we've talked about. You know, he got started, a lot of people would say Encino Man, that they know him. Like, they'll say, they'll bring that movie up when I say Brendan Fraser. Then he just kind of floats around. He pops in and out of stuff. And then in the late 90s, he gets George of the Jungle, which was like a Disney movie that I was raised on, and this. And then, you know, Mummy Returns comes out. You're starting to get that star burning really, really bright. He was in Crash, which I don't like Crash, but won the best picture at the Academy Awards. Like, he's really getting there. And then just kind of falls off the face of the planet. Does a couple other Disney movies. Does The Mummy 3. Just kind of gets in some stuff here or there and doesn't really do a whole lot for almost 20 years, for the better part of 20 years. And what now that he's come back into the spotlight and he's talked about it more, apparently the story behind this is around that time his star was burning bright. My guess is that it would be around the time of Crash, because that's why he would be at the Golden Globes. He was basically propositioned by a member of the Golden Globes and was like, no, please don't grab me in public, and went to the Golden Globes about it, and they were like, you're an actor, we're the Golden Globes, F off. And he just kind of removed himself from the industry at that point. Like, if this is how this is going to... I don't want to be around these kind of people. And it's taken him this long, not that he didn't make any movies in that time, but to really bring himself back into the spotlight after that incident. So it's very interesting to see a guy...
Is this a male or female member of the Golden Globes?
Male.
Okay. I was just trying to get the scene that you're talking about in my head. Interesting.
So it is interesting. It's sad because, again, you talk about 1999, 2001, two movies that almost made $1 billion. He probably had his choice of anything and just walked away and then came back 20 years later and won an Academy Award for Best Lead Actor. So I'm curious kind of where you guys go at with Brendan Fraser, what your opinion of him is as a whole. I'm assuming, Brad, then, if you never saw this or the second one, you probably have a little bit different take on it than you do, but what do you guys think of Brendan Fraser?
I don't know if this is hot takey or not, but I don't like Brendan Fraser. When you say Brendan Fraser, I do think Encino Man, because that's the one that kind of, I guess, brought him onto the scene for me. I've never really enjoyed his acting. He's got an interesting... he doesn't have your normal leading man sort of look or vibe. He does a little more in this one than some of the others. But, like, he just seems a little bit more hokey, you know, in his acting style, I guess, than you would with, you know, like a Tom Cruise or somebody like that. Like, you can't see... I don't see Brendan Fraser, you know, doing Top Gun or something like that, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, he's not going to be that guy. But, yeah, I guess I didn't miss him while he was away. I don't know that I'll ever go see The Whale, even though I've, you know, heard it's good and heard that he did a great job acting. But, yeah, for me, he's just kind of if it's a take it or leave it, I'm more of a leave it with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, I think that he's an interesting actor in that he can play a support role fine, and he can also kind of level up to be the lead man, or has proven that he can do that in a movie like this that can be very successful. And I don't question, you know, as you watch this movie, you don't question, I don't think, his charisma, his ability to play the role. But this is a B-level leading man movie, right? Like, the interesting thing probably about this movie is more that it did succeed as well as it did, more so than anything. It feels like this movie should have been one that just kind of like got lost in the shuffle, and then ended up becoming big enough, and like you said, making about $1 billion between the two. So incidentally, when I think Brendan Fraser, I think these movies, and then I think of his three episode split over two season arc on the television show Scrubs. He does a really great job in that, and that arc ends with him unexpectedly dying, which then leads to a huge kind of emotional episode between the lead character played by Zach Braff and then Dr. Cox, you know, by Johnny C. McGinley. And so, but that doesn't work without Brendan Fraser coming in, and that was 2002, 2004 were those arcs. So right after this, so he comes in with that leading man gravitas, but just in a bit role, three episodes, and nails it. So I haven't seen The Whale. I probably will at some point if the opportunity presents itself. But it doesn't surprise me, I guess is what I'm saying, that he would have performed in such a way that he would have won an Academy Award, because I do think that talent is in there for him.
Oh, that when he took his break, the first thing I saw him in when he came back was a show on, it was Stars or Showtime, it was called The Affair, which for a couple seasons was actually like fantastic, amazing television, jumped the shark and then some. But he came in as a prison guard when one of the main characters was in jail, and I didn't recognize him because he has put on quite a bit of weight in the last 20. I mean, so it took me a couple, two, three episodes to kind of like, oh, that's Brendan Fraser. But as he was acting, I was like, oh, my God, like, this is not the guy from The Mummy anymore. This guy, so like you said there, I've seen a few episodes of Scrubs, not that storyline. So also, too, did not surprise me when he started getting Academy Award nomination buzz, then eventually won, because he does have it in there. And it's always good, because you start pulling for guys when they do, in a movie like this, like, I enjoyed this movie as a kid and the second one. And so you get behind a guy because he's charismatic in an action movie. And then you'd like to see success down the road. And seeing it this way, I think it's great. And especially with the story of his personal life, I'm happy for the guy, regardless of, you know, take it or leave it on the movies. I think that's awesome that he bounced back from that. The interesting side of it, behind the camera, this is directed by Stephen Sommers. And not that we have to get this much into this, but I just kind of think it's hilarious. This guy directed, really didn't do much. He got this and obviously hit a home run for the studio. Big money. Then did Mummy Returns, big money. And I'm sure that they were thinking they had a star on their hands. His next two films are Van Helsing and G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. And he has done one movie since. So if you can tank a career any faster than that, I don't know if I've seen it, than Hugh Jackman's Van Helsing and Channing Tatum's G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
In fairness, though, didn't both of those movies deliver exactly what they were supposed to?
Oh, if Van Helsing's on, I'll watch it. Like, I yes, you're correct, but...
I mean, it's a terrible movie, but it wasn't supposed to be anything other than a terrible movie.
$160 million, made $300, so probably came pretty close to losing money by the time you do advertising, things like that. G.I. Joe did get a sequel, but again, $200 million, made $300 at the box office, definitely lost money. But that's surprising, because usually Hollywood, if you do something enough, like look at M. Night Shyamalan. When was the last time he made a legitimately really good movie? But everybody, you got, and we're going to talk about later this month, about earning some goodwill a few decades ago and still getting chance after chance after chance. This guy did not get that, even though he produced almost $1 billion for a studio. They gave up after two movies because, yeah, he hasn't done anything since. I just think that's wild.
Hey, I agree with you. At the same time, like, I do think, like, if I put those four movies up against each other, right, this and The Mummy Returns are clearly better.
Oh, yes.
I don't think that it is by, like, multitudes. I think that what it shows is how a couple of changes in a script, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Rachel Weisz and Brendan Fraser having the chemistry they did on the screen. They're just, that was, I think, more than anything what was lacking from the other two movies, is there wasn't anything that made me just go, okay, now I'm engaged in these characters like there were in the Mummy movies.
Because she, I mean, spoiler alert for The Mummy Returns, if you were now going to go watch the second one, Brad, I'm sorry. She dies in the second one for about a half hour. And it's really, like, I remember, like, it's affecting. Like, and he gives a really good performance. You get a little glimpse of, like, this dude's actually an A-level actor. And it's all because of the chemistry that the two of them have. They have a kid in the second one. I couldn't even tell you what the kid looks like, because I still just think about the two of them in the movie.
Well, from what I read, he almost died in the first one, so they almost didn't get to make a second one. So he, like, when they did that hanging scene, he had to be resuscitated.
That's right. I did remember hearing that. Yeah, they messed that up.
Like, that's pretty scary. Yeah, to think that he died and had to be brought back. So, yeah, I mean, I guess thank you for telling me that. So now I don't have to go watch it, because that was on my list of things to do now. No, it wasn't. But, yeah, I guess that would be one of those that now that I've seen the first one, if someone said, hey, it's going to be on, I might check it out. But, you know, it's not going to go out of my way to. I don't seem to have, like, this endless number of hours that when it comes to watching movies, I think you're Zach Morris and you just freeze time and watch a movie and then time starts back up because you're like, yeah, if that's on, I'll watch it. And again, in my head, I'm thinking, like, when the hell does he have time to watch this stuff? But then I forgot you live in that world of push this button to pause everything and watch a movie because
it's a great superpower to have.
Red Eye 47 times now from what I understand.
Oh, I watch it once a day. That's just a morning routine.
At this point, I think you have to just to keep moving that number up to bewilder Brad.
I might as well. So are there any other performances that you guys want to touch on from the movie? I mean, Jonathan's funny, sure, but I mean, it really is driven by Rachel Weisz, Brendan Fraser, and then just kind of the story itself.
Yeah, Rachel Weisz obviously stood out. The one guy is funny. I'm going to find his name here.
The brother?
It looks like Omid. Was he Warden Gadd? Is that the fat guy that dies?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, like he...
The scarab?
He had the bug that went through his body. Yeah. He had that comedic, you know, interject into a scene and kind of bring some lightness to it, so I enjoyed his performance.
I always liked, as a kid, I thought the Magi guy, and I'm blanking on his name. Mm-hmm. I just thought he was, like, the coolest, like, badass extra character I'd ever seen, and I wish I could remember his name off the top of my head, but I always really enjoyed him. But I think that will bring us into favorite line, favorite scene. Fellas, let's just kick it off with favorite line. Do you guys have a favorite line from The Mummy?
I do. Well, actually, there was two. I'm going to say my first one, let you guys go, and I'd like to come back with my 1B. But the 1A was, compared to you, the other plagues were a joy. I just thought that was a nice, funny moment there. So that was my line.
Yeah, that was up there for me. I enjoyed, we didn't mention Kevin O'Connor as Benny, but I thought that he did a good job as kind of the little weasel and all that. So there are a couple of interactions between Benny and you know, Rick and Brendan Fraser's character, but I enjoyed this one. Right, well, if it ain't my little buddy Benny, I think I'll kill you. And Benny responds, think of my children. He goes, you don't have any children. Someday I might.
Well, you don't have to circle back for my 1B, because that was 1B. Yes. So
that was also going to be mine. So we were all on the same page. So that one is...
Let me throw in a second 1B, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know how to quote it exactly, but essentially that guy dies, and the one I was talking about, and then the brother says, well, did you see how he ate? And, like, how he ate had nothing to do with how he died. So that was hilarious to me that, like, why would he care how poorly he ate if he died from going crazy over this bug, you know? But right. So it was a nice little funny moment.
So I'll kind of then, like, my 1B, I'll just wrap into my favorite scene and I'll just go with it from the start. My favorite scene is actually the boat scene. And my line that, like, goes with it is... And I think the boat scene encapsulates, like, yes, Brendan Fraser actually was a really good choice for a leading man, because just hint, like, when he rolls out all his guns and she's sitting there and, like, has to move her books and he's cleaning his guns, like, he is smooth and cool and charming, like, when he's doing that, and very likable. And then it, like, when it starts, he asks her if she can swim, she says if the occasion calls for it, and he just tosses her overboard while it calls for it. Like, he's just so cool. But then he does the action really well in that scene too, and I think the action in that scene is really awesome. Like, for not being, I know the focus is the mummy and the horror, the scary stuff, but for it just being these guys running onto the boat, and they light the one guy on fire, and you can tell it's a practical effect. That's a suit that some guy's in that they lit on fire, and he jumps off into the water and all that stuff. Like, I think that's a really, really well-done action scene that adds a little bit something different. They don't just rely on the mummy. They do give you some human element, which always adds something to it. And I just thought that was a really, really actually well-done action scene, not just like a stupid fun action scene. They put that together, and it gives us Brendan Fraser as... Now he's not just the guy in the jail cell. This is why Rick O'Connell is the one they're going to. That's why they could use him. This is why he is who he is. So that's my favorite scene, is the whole boat scene.
And why is his name Rick? Does it? That just stood out to me as a weird choice for a name.
I don't know if that goes Rick back O'Connell. To the original. I know, like, the Boris Karloff in 1932, like, Imhotep has always been the mummy, so I don't know if that name also came from the original. Not that this movie's even close to the original, but I don't know if they pulled that as well.
Rick. I don't know. It seemed odd to me that that was the character's name, but...
So for my scene, I was actually going to go with the same one. The boat scene is my favorite, I think, for all the reasons you said. But then I'll just add a 1B for, in terms of lines for me, which is at the end of that, right? They're separated out, and yes. He goes, you know, it looks like we have all the horses. And he responds, looks like you're on the wrong side of the river. So again, there's
the look
great
on his face when
this.
He looks around and he's like, are we like,
yeah, exactly. I enjoyed that resolution of that. And again, have this dramatic scene, and then they're able to resolve it with that humor.
Can you explain that to me? Why did it matter that he was on the wrong side of the river? Because when he said that, I thought, well, why can't he just cross it again?
I mean, I assume the river's
presumably at that
too
time
too deep in the middle to get a horse across.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You would have to go quite a ways to get to a place where you could ford the river, or there's a bridge on the river. And so,
gotcha. Okay.
If you're on the right side of the river, then you can just go straight there. And so, even though they don't have the horses and they had to go get camels and all that stuff, they were able to make it there on time with them, even though they had the horses, because they had to go the long way around.
Gotcha. Okay. When he said that, I was like, well, just cross it again. They got to that side somehow. So anyways, my scene, there's nothing that really stood out, but the part that I enjoyed the most was like the first, I would say 15 minutes, where you're being introduced to this character in a battle that you don't really know what's going on yet or understand. And you see like all of his, essentially what you think are his friends leaving him to then defend this area, and then, you know, probably leading up to the capture and the hanging before they kind of cut his hair was like the part that drew me in. From there, it, you know, there were parts that left me. So I think that just that opening fight in 10-15 minutes is what was my favorite part, or I guess quote-unquote scene of the movie.
All right, well, I think that will do it for our conversation of The Mummy, my choice for the month of May. Next week, we're going to do Brad's choice for the month of May, changing up genres a little bit, the comedy What About Bob, Bill Murray and Billy Crystal. Not Billy Crystal. Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, same thing.
Billy Crystal.
sorry about that. But yeah, that'll be next week. This week was The Mummy. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.